I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer, and everybody remembers those dark days in the fall of 2008 after Lehman Brothers and AIG collapsed. That led to the $700 billion bank bailout and the global recession and the mortgage crisis that produced millions of foreclosed homes. The documentary Inside Job by Charles Ferguson attempts to lay out the anatomy of the financial meltdown and in the process unravels the root causes, the conflicts of interest, the regulators asleep at the wheel, and the bankers who made off like bandits. Here's a clip of an interview with the French finance minister, Christine Lagarde.
I remember very well I think it was a G7 meeting of February 2008, and I remember discussing the issue with Hank Paulson, and I clearly remember telling Hank, we are watching this tsunami coming, and you just proposing that we ask which swimming costume we're going to put on.
Joining me now in the fifth of our five interviews with filmmakers behind this year's Oscar-nominated documentaries is Audrey Marr. She's the producer of Inside Job. Welcome to WNYC and congratulations.
Thank you so much, Jamie. I'm a frequent listener, so it's exciting to be here.
Well, it's exciting for me, too, and I know Brian would also say congratulations. So
thank you.
What is the goal of this documentary?
I would say the goal is, we wanted to make a beautiful movie, but also one that would move the conversation forward, that would allow people to leave the theater smarter than when they walked in, and hopefully with a greater understanding of what had most likely happened to them and their money over the past few years.
But what piece of the economic crisis did you and Charles Ferguson think had not yet been told that needed to be revealed?
Well, I think a lot of it had been told, but I think the difficulty for your average citizen was curating the information and putting it together in a somewhat linear fashion, since it's not really a linear story. And Charles is close with two of the interviewees in the film, Charlie Morris and Nouriel Roubini, who were widely credited with predicting the crisis. And so early on, they were sort of telling him a lot of things, for instance, about the conflict of interest within the economics discipline, which is something that many people who did, in fact, follow the crisis said they were surprised by.
Mm-hmm. Well, the film does a great job of explaining the policies that went into allowing for the massive housing bubble, credit default swaps, collateralized debt obligations, policies that lifted leverage limits. And the title suggests that, as the main point seems to be to blame the system for allowing blatant conflicts of interest on the part of government regulators. Let's listen to another clip along those lines. This is from an interview that Charles did with David McCormick, the undersecretary at the Treasury Department under Hank Paulson during the Bush administration.
I'm playing the hand that was dealt me. A lot of what I'm dealing with, I'm dealing with the consequences of things that were done often many years ago.
Secretary Paulson spoke throughout the fall and all the potential root causes of this, and there are plenty. He called them. So I'm not sure.
You're not being serious about that, are you?
I am being serious. What would you have expected? What were you looking for that you didn't see?
He was the senior advocate for prohibiting the regulation of credit default swaps and also lifting the leverage limits on the investment banks.
So, again,
he mentioned those things? I never heard him mention those things.
Could we turn this off for a second?
You always love it when they say, can we turn this off for a second? You know you've got something good.
Yeah, that's true.
And Charles Ferguson's going pretty hard at this guy who worked at Treasury under Paulson. We never see his face, but we do hear Charles Ferguson's voice while he's interviewing people.
Yeah.
Charles Ferguson, of course, also directed The No End in Sight, criticizing the U.S. occupation in Iraq. And he has a reputation for being an anti-establishment, strong point of view director of documentaries with a point of view, not an objective documentarian. And he successfully lays out the negligence of the people central to the economic crisis. But do you think the film runs the risk of being too much of a polemic, too much of a hit job, too biased, all of those kinds of critiques documentarians can receive?
Well, honestly, it's interesting to hear you say that he has a reputation for not being objective, which I know that's how some people feel, because our intention going into both was to be as objective as we possibly could. For instance, obviously, several of the interviewees are extremely uncomfortable on camera, but we really didn't go in with the intention of causing discomfort whatsoever. We went in with the intention of seeking the truth and trying to get to, you know, the core of some of these issues. But unfortunately, sometimes a symptom of truth is discomfort.
No thumbtacks on the seats.
No, even though it appears that way at times, I will admit.
Well, I only ask the question because it's my job to ask the question. And certainly many documentarians do take a point of view. But you're suggesting that you did not have one going into making the film, that the film simply evolved as an organic product.
Well, I wouldn't suggest that. I would say that Charles is the ultimate researcher. And even prior to beginning, I think he probably read everything possible on the subject, which is a massive amount of information. So he had, you know, he had an idea of where the film was going to go. However, with interviews and with chasing a story that's unfolding, you don't really know what's going to happen, and some of those views are overturned, and you have to flip around the structure that you originally thought you were going to go with. So, yeah, there was some kind of point of view, but if he was wrong about something that he researched early on, we weren't committed to anything like that. It was really about trying to figure out what had actually truly happened.
Throughout the film, it becomes apparent that the bankers and the government regulators are basically in bed together, that the regulators looked the other way when they were warned about the impending financial collapse. And that even extends, and this is pretty surprising, or at least it was to me, to economics professors. Here's a piece of the story I think a lot of people don't know about how academic economists are responsible for touting the kind of deregulation that led to this crisis. Take a listen to this. The first voice is the financier George Soros. The second voice is actor Matt Damon, who did the voiceover for the film. And then Charles Morris, the author of The $2 trillion meltdown.
Deregulation had tremendous financial and intellectual support because people argued it for their own benefit. The economics profession was the main source of that illusion.
Since the 1980s, academic economists have been major advocates of deregulation and played powerful roles in shaping U.S. government policy. Very few of these economic experts warned about the crisis. And even after the crisis, many of them opposed reform.
The guys who taught these things tended to get paid a lot of money being consultants. Business school professors don't live on a faculty salary. They do very, very well.
Well, Audrey Mars, there goes my idealism.
Say
a little more about this. This is one of the pieces of the story we don't hear very often, the role that academic economists played in sanctioning what turned out to be very risky financial policies like deregulation. Where did this piece of the story come from?
I think Charles got his PhD at MIT, I don't remember what year, but I think he started to get a sense of that type of conflict of interest back then. But for me, you know, my background is in art, certainly not anything remotely related to finance or economics. I, as many other people, were extremely shocked. And I would say probably the most remarkable part of the process for me, being the producer, is that all of them agreed to be interviewed without really even knowing who we are and probably assuming that we didn't know very much. So many people have said, why on earth would these people agree to be in your film? It's easy to ask that question after seeing it, but, I think the remarkable thing is that they just had never been challenged on this subject before, so it really snuck up on them.
And I was also so surprised that you had Matt Damon, huge Hollywood star, for the voiceover. You got interviews with really big name people, George Soros, the French finance minister, the prime minister of Singapore, Paul Volcker, Elliot Spitzer, and a whole host of others. How did you get all these big names? And I guess the better question is probably who didn't you get? Who wouldn't talk to you?
Well, who didn't talk to us was everyone that you would think in the Obama administration who we would have gotten had we been able to get anyone we wanted. So, I mean, if you think of the person, that's probably someone that we asked. We were pretty thorough with that process. Matt Damon, you know, we could have easily just assumed that he was too big for our movie, but it doesn't hurt to ask. And so I got in touch with his agent and surprisingly got a really enthusiastic phone call from a woman in that office saying that he was a huge fan of our previous film, No One in Sight, which we had no idea. And he was just lovely and did it for much less money than he's used to being paid and you know, really contributed to the film in a really significant way. So we were really grateful to him. As far as the interview subjects go, I mean, you know, it's difficult because you're reaching out to people who probably get massive amounts of emails and you're trying to figure out how to communicate with them without knowing them. So I would try to formulate some kind of psychoanalysis based on, you know, what would they respond to mm-hmm. based on what I've seen by their TV appearances or what I've read about them. And, it takes a lot of tenacity. These are busy people. Sometimes it would take 8 emails or something. And I think the combination of I was not untruthful in any way. I was extremely upfront about what we were doing. And I think the combination of that and their interest in the subject and then reading Charles's CV and figuring out, you know, this is a serious guy making a film on a serious subject, surprisingly many of them said yes. And a joy for me as a producer with working with Charles for 2 films is always calling him and saying, you wouldn't believe who agreed to be interviewed. It's always nice to let him know that. So,
well, I will point out that the no's, the people who are not in the film, are Bernanke, Paulson, Greenspan, and anyone from Goldman Sachs. Will you be going to the Oscars on February 27th?
I will, in fact, be going, yes.
All right. Well, I congratulate you terrifically on your film.
Thank you so much.
And thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
All right. My wonderful guest has been the producer of the film Inside Job. It is by Charles Ferguson. Her name is Audrey Mars. And I am Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. And the Brian Lehrer Show is produced by Lisa Allison, Jody Avergan, Paige Cowett, with Alan Smith, Alana Casanova, Burgess. And we've had intern help from Jonathan Carlson, Mike LeVay. That's Debbie Fountain at the audio controls. And our senior producer is the wonderful Megan Ryan. And I'll be back one day next week, and there will be some other hosts here on Monday and Tuesday. Have a wonderful weekend.